Welcome to Chai with Manju. Our special guest today is the chair of Department of Physics at Harvard University. He's also one of the most well-known experts in the condensed matter theory. He recently received Dirac Medal, which is considered one of the most prestigious awards in the world of theoretical physics. Let us welcome Subir Sachdev. Hello and welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming to the show.
Glad to be here.
Okay. So, you're truly a parent's dream, especially Indian parents, with both your academics as well as career with IIT, MIT, stint at Yale, and now at Harvard.
You started your life. You gotta be lucky.
yes. And hardworking. So you were born in Delhi. You started your life in Delhi and then moved to Bangalore, where you had your early education. Now, your family is also very heavily science-based family, right? Tell us more about them.
Well, my father is an electrical engineer, and he worked for the Indian telephone company in Bangalore. And then he moved to the U.S., and he worked for a company called Intelsat, which does satellite communications of phone calls and TV signals. And he's still involved in that area. And my brother is an engineer who works for Colgate in New Jersey. And my sister got a degree in biology, and she lives in Toronto. So, I was always interested in science from a young age.
And I read somewhere that you were a very good student, an annoyingly good student. What is the story behind that?
Well, I guess high school in India can be very competitive, and we think we're competing against each other, but not really. But but I know I'm very good friends with my classmates from high school.
Now, I remember in those days, dating myself, the joint entrance exam was very big. And you actually came second, right, for engineering. What was that like? And then you got an IIT right away, right, and skipped your 12th grade.
So I gave the exam after 11th. You had the option of doing that, and yes, I got in, and then I joined IIT in Delhi, and that was a fun time. Let's learn lots of interesting things. But after a year, we moved to the U.S.
And MIT came calling, right?
Well, I applied to MIT. Of course, it seemed like an incredible dream to be able to come to MIT at that time.
Right. That was in 1979.
That's correct, yes.
And in MIT also, again, you did the accelerated program and you got a degree in 2.5 years?
Yes, I switched to physics after coming to MIT because I was working in the lab of Professor Kleppner. And really enjoyed that very much. And also in my MIT days, I lived in a fraternity, believe it or not, which is still there on Commonwealth Avenue in downtown Boston. And I made a lot of good friends. And
you wrote a very exciting paper in those days. You know, share with us, viewers, about that.
You mean my undergraduate thesis?
Yes.
Well, I was working in the lab, as I mentioned, but I was not good at it. In fact, almost anything I touched used to break down. So my advisor said, okay, why don't you work out a theory of something that's been happening in the lab? And it turned out I worked it out and published a paper and won this award for that paper.
What was the paper about?
It was about how atoms emit light. Atoms emit light by electrons moving from one place in the atom to another place. But if you take an atom and put it in a very small box, it can change the way atoms emit light. And so that was what my work was about. How does the presence of this box change the way atoms emit light? You know, at that time, it was an interesting unsolved problem. And today, it's, you know, much more complicated things have been done.
You went to Harvard after that?
Right.
And did your PhD there?
Yes.
And what was that like?
That was, it's a small class of students and, all of my classmates were incredible. I learned an incredible a lot from them, and was opened up to many, many different aspects of physics.
Okay.
And the things I learned in those days are, you know, with me today too. And and it's a great privilege to be back in the department now.
Absolutely.
And teaching this, you know, students like me.
And Harvard was followed by your postdoc in Bell Labs, and then you were at Yale for 18 years, right?
Correct, yes.
How was the Yale experience?
So Yale is a bit of a smaller place than Harvard or MIT, but they gave me a very nice environment with some good colleagues, I spent many years working on some topics that were interesting to me, and nobody really cared about it very much. But now, 20 years later, some of the papers I wrote at Yale are now, you know, become very popular, and everyone's working on those topics, so... It was good to have an experience where, you know, I had not everybody was looking at exactly what I was doing. I had a time to develop my own ideas. Of course, in Yale also, my two daughters were born. And so they grew up in New Haven. And so we have very fond memories, my wife Usha and I, of our time at Yale.
I was reading that, you know, of course, when Harvard invited you to join them, I think in 2005, it was, it's a lot of Indians' dream to go to Harvard. And I think your family must have been very excited and a little bit persuasive, or it was all your idea to come to Harvard.
Well, so, of course, it's everybody's dream to get an offer at Harvard. And Harvard is a very exciting place to do physics. But, yeah, we were reasonably well settled, and my daughters naturally didn't want to leave their friends and start a new life. But, yeah, my wife and my, I think, parents all advised me that this was an opportunity I couldn't pass up, and I agreed with that, of course. And my children, my girls, were initially, you know, not, well, it was hard for them, but within a few months, they were delighted and settled down with new lives.
So how did you meet your wife, Usha?
So we met when we were both students at Harvard. I went one evening to what's called Urdu Ki Mez. They had a table at Elliott House where, you know, you can have dinner, and but you have to speak in Hindi or Urdu with people at the table.
So, aapko Urdu aati hai?
हाँ हिंदी बोल सकता हूँ
थोड़ी थोड़ी
हाँ तो हिंदी उर्दू हिंदी की मेज़ सुनी है हाँ बराबर है तो वो मेरे सामने बैठी थी
उसे Do you watch Big Bang Theory?
I've seen it a few times.
That's where we all got interested in.
So they have, you know, I know people like those characters. Well, I think there's no one exactly like them. I think the characters in the show are composites. But it's
do you sometimes know any Sheldons.
Yeah, I would say I do. I mean, there are people with some of Sheldon's traits. I mean, but in the show, of course, Sheldon seems to know everything about every field of physics.
That's true.
There's no one like that.
No, your work is so high level, so advanced that even, I mean, it's hard to understand. I even read the Times of India article recently. Now, how do you explain your work as super specialized as it is to simple people or lay people or even, you know, aam janta who watches this show? Tell us about your work.
Sure. Well, you know, it's not that complicated. You know, given an hour, I think you can explain it to everyone.
we don't have an hour.
But, you know, so everyone's heard of Newton's laws of motion, how they describe the motion of the planets, Earth around the sun. But now we go to much smaller scales. If you take a simple hydrogen atom, then that has an electron moving around a proton. And so the first guess would be the same equations that describe the Earth also describe the electron. That turns out not to be true. We need an update to Newton's laws, and that's called the theory of quantum mechanics, which was discovered in the early 1920s, late 1920s. And you may have heard of something called the uncertainty principle.
Yes, yes.
Which is how you can't determine both the position and mm-hmm. the velocity of an electron at the same time. So that's one of the fundamental principles of quantum mechanics.
Okay.
And through that theory, you know, we have now a complete understanding of, say, the hydrogen atom for sure.
Okay.
But now we want to go to a more complicated system.
Right.
No, not take one electron, uh-huh. take two or three and really infinite numbers and
okay.
ask what happens.
Okay.
So this is important for, you know, determining properties of materials. So, you know, you ask a question, why is this, you know, why does this this cup shiny, or
okay.
why does a uh-huh. piece of metal conduct electricity, and okay. why is some material a magnet?
Uh-huh.
So these are all fundamental questions which can be answered by the same science of quantum mechanics. And, mm-hmm. and what I work on is translating the fundamental principles to
okay.
properties of matter.
Okay.
And so there's one another idea that comes up when you go from one to infinity,
uh-huh.
Which is the idea of entanglement.
Okay.
So electrons
okay.
can entangle with each
okay.
other quantum mechanically, which means that if you look at one, you
uh-huh.
immediately change the state of the other.
Okay.
So
okay.
this is another very surprising feature of our world,
okay.
which has in fact been verified many times by experiments.
Okay.
And so some of my contributions have been to understand how entanglement can influence
okay.
properties of matter.
Okay.
You know, and these are materials that could be of practical use. And
okay.
In the past, there have been many materials that people in my field have studied that have been
okay.
of great use in making your iPhone, for example. But I don't work on that
okay.
directly. I'm working
okay.
on some other set of materials, and one can dream that someday
okay.
These theoretical ideas will help make
mm-hmm.
Materials with interesting and useful properties.
Okay. Sometimes people, you know, we read in the news, there are a lot of claims made that a lot
mm-hmm.
of work in quantum physics has also been done in India, you know, hundreds of years ago, and of course some recent. Has
yeah.
there been any exciting research in India?
Oh, there is a lot of exciting
okay.
research in India. I mean, so in the 1930s, there
okay.
were, of course, there are two famous Indian physicists, Bose and Raman.
Uh-huh.
Raman won the Nobel Prize, Bose didn't. And they made absolutely fundamental contributions to
mm-hmm.
the very basic theory
uh-huh.
of quantum mechanics.
Okay.
Raman actually did some experiments.
Uh-huh.
So, and today there are many, many people in my field working in all across India, and I often
uh-huh.
go to conferences and discuss with them.
Okay.
But if you go back to ancient times,
uh-huh.
I mean, I would say there have been many fundamental contributions
mm-hmm.
by Indian scientists and mathematicians.
Right.
You know, for example, there's a scientist called a mathematician known as Madhava, who
mm-hmm.
in the 12th and 13th century already had advanced trigonometry and also had some understanding of
mm-hmm.
basic calculus.
Mm-hmm.
These things were rediscovered in the West
mm-hmm.
okay. 200 years later by Newton and others. And these things are, the unfortunate thing is many of these things are not known to Indians today.
Right.
But on the other hand, there are a lot of claims about, you know, airplanes in ancient
yeah.
India, which are just totally false.
Okay.
You know? So I think it's important to stick to the truth.
Uh-huh.
And there's if you stick to actual accomplishments, there's a lot
yeah.
to be proud of in ancient India.
Okay. Do you, you know, you do so much work in theoretical physics. Is there any vision that you have that some of the work that you do could
mm-hmm.
be, in, you know, could be applicable in future?
Well, one can hope. I mean, there's been many
mm-hmm.
examples in,
mm-hmm.
even in recent history where,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
things that seemed very theoretical
mm-hmm.
and abstract
uh-huh.
suddenly found an application. So
mm-hmm.
These days, many people are trying to mm-hmm. use quantum mechanics to build quantum computers. I mean,
okay.
but they could be
mm-hmm.
other more subtle other applications of quantum
mm-hmm.
mechanics related to quantum computing,
mm-hmm.
say in quantum cryptography or
okay.
detecting molecules or creating new types of chemicals and so on. And the ideas that are in these fields are very much related to the ideas that I work on. So maybe
mm-hmm.
some of my work will have an impact. We'll see.
Talking of learning, people
yes.
who want to learn
mm-hmm.
more about your work, let's tell them about your books.
Sure. So there are two books here. So this is a book I wrote about 15 years ago, Quantum Phase Transitions. This is about what happens to, you know, lots of, you know, if you have many, many electrons in some quantum state, then as you change, say, the pressure on them or their temperature, they can undergo transformations to new states. You know, a simple example is water boiling to steam, but that's, you know, very simple, just understood by the temperature making the molecules move faster. But quantum mechanically, there can also be phase transformations, which are much more subtle and involve changes in the entanglement of the electrons. So that's what this book is about. And the second book, actually written by two of my younger colleagues who were at Harvard, Sean Hartnall, who's now a professor at Stanford, and Andy Lucas, who's now a professor in Colorado. And this is about really a whole new field that started about 10 years ago, and which I was involved in, which connects the properties of electrons in matter to the properties of black holes, if you can believe it. So there's a rather remarkable and deep connection between the nature of entanglement of electrons in certain states of matter and what happens to matter near the horizon of a black hole.
Okay. For those of us who don't understand, I have read a little bit about it. Tell us about this black hole.
Right. So a black hole is a, you know, very, very dense star. And it's so dense that if light goes out of the star, it gets, it comes back right in. It can't escape. And there are lots of black holes out there in the universe, and including in our own galaxy. So this was... So these are such big objects, and it would think that you could describe them like other big objects just by the without quantum mechanics. And that's largely true, but one of Stephen Hawking's great contributions was to understand that quantum mechanics actually has a very strong consequence in some aspects of black holes. So he realized that black holes are have entropy, which is which is that there is some randomness associated with the surface of a black hole due to quantum uncertainty applying to the surface of a black hole. And but then he noticed that there were also certain contradictions in this when you brought quantum mechanics to a black hole, and and these contradictions have been driving research in physics for the longest time since his discovery in the 70s. I wasn't working in this field at all. I was just working, you know, in my, with my electrons in my little materials here. But amazingly, it turned out there was a connection between the kind of quantum fluctuations that happen in electrons in materials to the fluctuations that happen on the horizon of a black hole.
Very intriguing.
Yeah, so this was a, you know, this general connection came up out of string theory first. But then in recent years, in fact, some of the things I was working in Yale have, and something now people call the SYK model, and the S. Although Usha says it should be called the PSYK model because her last name is Pazzi. Well, she gave me some inspiration anyway. Anyway, so the SYK model turns out to be a model not just of electrons and matter, but also of some very simple types of black holes. And this cross-fertilization between two fields has, you know, really become a very active area of research. It's what this book is about, and it's, I think, a big part of why I won the Dirac Medal.
And we hope that you don't stop there, and one day you get Nobel Prize. But before you get to that, we as a community are very proud of you, and we are. It's such a privilege for us to honor you at New England Choice Awards. We're looking forward to honor you on October 26th. So thank you so much.
You're very kind. Thank you.